The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
There's a lot of people running their mouth that don't stay the night, never come through town. And some other people running about that don't take the time to suss you out. Still some of us every night be making toast to you, like isn't it nice that somebody had the presence of mind to speak up for you? Let there be light.
Welcome to the Crude Life Week in Review. My name is Jason Spies. Thank you, folks, for joining us here this week. We got a fantastic show in store for you as we continue our petrol-powered podcast and news broadcast radio program. Thank you, folks, for joining in today. 20-plus radio affiliates, plus 500,000 social media followers with all the different diverse platforms we have here at the Crude Life. Thank you very much for joining us here, folks. Plus, we're available on Substack, www.thecrudelife.substack.com. On today's program, we have Joe Sinnott with Witting Partners and the host of the Energy Detox Podcast joins us to talk March Madness. Actually, we're going to talk about how these coaches deal with some of these different issues that are part of the new culture. NIL, name, image, likeness, or you got Kentucky one and done, and look at that. They're one and done already. So there's a lot of issues that coaches face which translate into the workplace or the home life. So we talk about the March Madness. Also, Clint King with VR Shepherd. That's virtual reality. Talk about saving money. Talk about safety. And talk about the new wave. Clint King with VR Shepherd. And Toyota is actually doing virtual reality training, so are some police departments. Clint King will talk about that, plus much, much more. Supply chain, what's happening? RMI Supply. Mark Workman gives us an update. We find out what's going on with the supply chain. Also, it's Women's History Month. All month long, the Crude Life has been celebrating and honoring Women's History Month. We're going to play some of our Elma Cook interview because the music you hear right now, this theme song being played, is Elma Cook. She wrote it, she produced it, she sang it. She's one of the top-notch professionals in my life. And if you have some compliance needs, Elma Cook also works in the oil and gas industry, folks. Elma Cook a little bit later on in the program. And the music you hear, of course, is Elma Cook for the intro and outro theme. Plus, Steve Bakken on Talk of the Town. We talk about some of the production issues up in the Bakken oil field, plus much, much more on today's episode of the Crude Life Week in Review. But right now, we're going to head out to Colorado, where Energy Day at the Capitol took place. Kelly Marshall gives us a boots-on-the-ground update of what took place in Colorado during their Energy Day at the Capitol.
All right, let's head over to the Zoom line. Kelly Marshall on the line with us, Chief Marketing Officer within the oil and gas industry. She's also an energy ambassador as she was at the state capitol in Colorado for, Kelly, was it Energy Day? Was that what it was officially called? Was there a theme day behind it? I think Energy Day at the Capitol is what I think I saw.
I think that that's what they were calling it, yes.
And so Energy Day at the Capitol this year, I was actually trying to pay attention to it. I wasn't able to get out there, but I was anticipating there would be a pretty big showing this year from the oil and gas industry due to the three legislative bills that are looking at flat out banning oil and gas.
Yes.
You were there at the Capitol. Give us the rundown. What was the attendance like? What was the vibe like? Give us a little bit of a walkthrough.
It was, fortunately, everyone that showed up was composed. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of, you know, there was no boisterous anything. It was an enthusiastic group of people, but they were composed, I was proud to be part of it because of that. And Colorado Oil and Gas Association is the one who put the day together. And Dan Haley spoke very eloquently about the issues and was incredibly thankful for the 200 plus people that showed up to support not pushing through this legislation. And, you know, hopefully it makes a difference.
What is some of the legislation that, I guess, in a nutshell, I mentioned, you know, this is the ban oil and gas. I want to say that the target date is by 2030. What are some of the people saying in terms of, you know, the sound bites and some of the, you know, the things that are being told amongst each other that is being used to motivate people one way or another, either to get them to support this or get them to, you know, go and campaign against it?
Well, it seems that the pro Senate Bill 159 people, they're clearly people on the left, and it's kind of a broad stroke of reduce carbon emissions, get to net zero, have, you know, let's forego energy in order to have, in air quotes, a greener economy and a greener way of life. And on the other side, you've got oil and gas producers and an entire industry of employees who are saying, one, I don't want to be without power. Two, I don't want to pay 2-3 times as much for my energy or the gas that's in my car because we're going to ban it in Colorado and have to get it either from overseas or from other states who are already at max capacity. And if you really dig into it, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It doesn't make any sense, really. And it seems like the political agenda is leading the day.
You mentioned there is 250 people mm-hmm. at the Capitol. Was that right?
Yes, sir.
What is that like there? Here's why I ask is I've been covering political affairs and government affairs for, I don't know, 20, 25 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen an evolution. I've seen a change of a lot of different areas, but I've seen a change happen in protesting when it comes to social media, mm-hmm. where I've seen in some instances, it's become a photo op where it's almost like going to a gala. People are going for the party pics and want to be seen. And as soon as they get their party pic, they take off and they go. They're not even there 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get the other ones who, you know, they look at it like they've got CNN on their side and the world's viewing everything. So they're either instigated or trying to get something on video or trying to, you know, capitalize in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
What was the attendance like there? You know, 250 some people, did they storm Jared Governor Polis's office? Did everybody just hang out and do a couple photos on the Capitol step? Give us kind of a walkthrough on, you know, modern day protests, what that looks like.
Well, they started across the street and we were politely asked to leave that venue because the group was a little too boisterous for that closed area. So we went across the street to the Capitol steps and then everyone just stood around talking for a while. They got the mic up and working and everyone stood and listened to the facts about the bill, the bills that are under review and about the vote. And Dan was incredibly thankful for everyone that came out and showed up. And when we went into the building, there weren't many legislators there. And
to listen to the full-length interview with Kelly Marshall or to check out other exclusive interviews, visit thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. Stick around, more to come here on The Crude Life Week in Review. My name is Jason Spies, and you're listening to The Crude Life Week in Review.
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
In a world of ever-changing energy, staying ahead is crucial. We are introducing Oilman Magazine, your trusted source for leaders in American energy. At Oilman Magazine, they deliver more than just everyday industry news. They provide a comprehensive overview of the oil and gas market, revealing the trends, technologies, and software applications shaping the future. Visit oilmanmagazine.com and empower yourself with the knowledge that drives change. Together, let's shape the future of the oil and gas industry. Oil Man Magazine and their companion magazines, Oil Woman Magazine and Energies Magazine, leading the way for the leaders in American energy. Oil Man Magazine, your compass in a rapidly evolving world.
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
Head over to the Zoom line where we've got Mr. Joe Sinnott on the line with us. He's with the Energy Detox Podcast as well as the CEO of Whitting Partners. How's Joe doing today?
Joe is doing fine. Mid-March, enjoying life. Had a bit of sunshine this past weekend, so feeling pretty good, Jason.
Well, if it sounds like I'm tiptoeing a bit to start the interview off, it's because I am. I'm just trying to pull up the bracket as we talk a little bit about March Madness. A lot of stuff going on this year. One of the big controversial years because you had some out-of-nowhere teams winning their conference tournaments, therefore creating 5-6 bubble teams out of nowhere, which I find very funny. You know, people trying to manage speculation and trying to justify speculation when really the whole idea is to, you know, play the games on the court. And so, you know, that's kind of changed a little bit in today's world. But let's talk about March Madness in relation to the business world. I'm not talking about the $5 billion wasted on time and energy watching the games, filling out the brackets and all that fun stuff that goes along with it. You've seen those polls, Joe, haven't you? The amount of wasted resources because of March Madness.
Yes, it is a significant sum of time and again, money, but, hey, this is an institution. We don't talk about that when we have a day off for July 4th. So, you know, you could argue that.
One of the things I thought we could do is integrate in some of the challenges that our March Madness coaches face. And, you know, whether it's the hot streak or whether that's the one and done, whether, you know, it might be one of the, you know, we'll give an example for each one. And the first example I give is, of course, happening throughout sports. It's happening throughout corporate America. I'm going to give Nick Saban as my example. I know he's football, but there's also basketball teams, and Ed O'Bannon was the famous basketball player that sued the NCAA to make sure he gets compensated for his name, image, and likeness because, you know, UCLA was making money with video games, having him, you know, be the person. So, you know, without getting into that, I just call it a side hustle. You know, whether you're making money on the side as an athlete because Mercedes is paying you to drive around, you know, or Brian Bosworth getting paid by an oil company to get a suntan and make sure he watches those oil rigs move up and down. That's my favorite sponsorship of all time. But in corporate world, Joe, there is a lot of side hustle going on. There's a lot of people who are utilizing company time and company resources in order to benefit themselves personally on the side. That's a tough one nowadays because so many people look at it as, well, the horse is out of the barn, too bad. But at the same time, people are like, hey, if I'm paying you for 40 hours a week, can't you give me at least 30? My goodness, you're on social media 20 hours a day trying to, you know, sell your pyramid scheme products that you have going on or whatever the side hustle might be. But anyways, Joe, talk to me about balancing that fine line, because whether it's March Madness or it's corporate America, it's happening. People are blending that remote office into, you know, there was a famous line in Fast Times at Ridgemont High when Jeff Spicoli ordered a pizza. If it's my time and your time, why can't we have pizza together? So, you know, that wasn't the line, but he was trying to justify the sharing of time. So if you're in corporate America, how do you weed your way through that, if I may ask, or if you're in the NCAA or whatever?
Yeah, well, we could start with corporate America, because hearing you talk, Jason, made me think of, I think it was maybe a year or so into COVID when, you know, you start getting these stories and trends. And I remember one of them, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal, was talking about people that were literally holding two jobs, not just side hustles, but, you know, remote workers who, you know, were on, you know, would basically have two jobs. You know, they recognized that they, you know, could get their basic job done in whatever, you know, 15, 20 hours a week. And so it was funny, you know, they were profiling some people anonymously who, yeah, you know, occasionally they'd have a conflict and overlapping Zoom calls and they'd have to figure out a creative way to do that and not get caught. But anyway, you know, my mind goes to that, which again is new, right? I mean, that wasn't, you know, that wasn't a thing, you know, to the extent it is now. It wasn't really an option before COVID. Yes, people have always had side hustles. People have always perhaps found ways to make an extra buck on their primary company's dime. But, you know, there's lots of different options now, which brings us to the sports world, right? You know, you mentioned Nick Saban at the beginning, and, you know, that was all of his, or a lot of his recent comments about how things have changed. And this isn't what he signed up for. Things are different. And, you know, just because they're different doesn't mean they're worse. But, you know, to your point, Jason, what he recognized is that some of the side hustles, if you will, or some of the lack of focus, I should say, you know, some of the kids, the college kids that he was coaching, their focus clearly was not primarily on the betterment of themselves and their team. And that's what Nick Saban signed up for. That's what he did. He, you know, again, you can go back and read his quotes directly. I don't want to misrepresent them, but my interpretation listening to him was, hey, look, Nick Saban enjoyed molding these young men into, you know, their future selves. But now they're so darn focused on the side hustles and the short term and what's in it for me that, you know, he felt essentially incapable of fulfilling that bigger mission. And again, he claims that that's why he left. So again, bringing that back to corporate America.
Check out the full length interview in its entirety. Go to thecrudelife.com or check us out on Substack, www.thecrudelife.substack.com. More to come right here on The Crude Life Week in Review. My name is Jason Spies, and this is The Crude Life Week in Review. You know the waves like you know your skin. Feel them flowing over you again. I know where the moon begins. Right between the ocean and your skin. Well, I know where the moon comes in. Right between the ocean and your skin.
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
All right, let's head over to the Zoom line where we have Mark Workman with us. RMI Supply. That's RMI Supply. Mark Workman, how are you doing today, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for interviewing and visiting.
Well, no problem. Of course, one of the big things happening in the world right now is supply chains and logistics, and people are starting to hear that word in the mainstream news. I never thought I'd live in a world where logistics would be talked about on the nightly news. And so, you know, we thought we'd bring you in because you've really been in logistics since 1992. You've been around in the oil field since 2009. Talk to me about the genesis of RMI Supply, how you guys, trying to be a little bit more PC with my language, how your team, how your company has gotten to be, you know, where you're at today in the world of, you know, service and quality, integrity, like your website says, RMI Supply. You know, you guys are involved with oil field chemicals. So let's talk about that, the genesis of it.
Well, you know, the genesis came, you know, out of the idea that for years, when I started in 92, I had a freight brokerage and a trucking company and, you know, kind of learned the ins and outs of, you know, getting things done through transportation mostly. But the thing of it is what I learned is on the side lines of those things is the idea of telling the truth when it hurts you. Like the driver's going to fail, the truck's failing, it's not going to make it. You need to be able to call your customer within 30 seconds of finding that information out and telling the truth. So a lot of logistics is based on the idea of being truthful and then, you know, quick with your responses. And literally that's how I've ever established my business or grown this oil field side of the business since 2009 is is I literally have my customers tell me how quick I respond to things and answer questions and, you know, that kind of thing. So it's very important to me to respond quickly. But just on the logistics side is to tell them when there's problems as well as when it's really going well. You know, to being able to communicate like that and tell the truth, eventually you never lose a customer because they trust what you're going to say. So a lot of times logistics, the basis of it is just being a truth teller and then, you know, and then making the right contacts with the right trucking companies and the right lanes and understanding what your customer needs and the specs. And, you know, there's a lot of variables with all that, but getting all that in your head, so it's just part of your communication and it should be truthful. Anyway, that's my view.
To check out the full-length interview in its entirety, go to thecrudelife.com or check us out on Substack, www.thecrudelife.substack.com. More to come right here on The Crude Life Week in Review. My name is Jason Spies, and this is The Crude Life Week in Review.
Well, now the sharks in the water, they think you're pretty sweet.
Pretty sweet, pretty sweet, pretty sweet.
Oh, they're never gonna get you with their big old pearly teeth.
Pearly teeth, pearly teeth, pearly teeth.
Yeah, the word in the water is you're way too pretty to eat. 'Cause you're my pineapple, baby, let me be your mango man. You're my pineapple, baby, let me be your mango man. Come on, I wanna lay you on that black Hawaiian sand.
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy. The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
All right, let's head over to the Zoom line where we've got Clint Kling from VR Shepherd. It's that nice Shepherd dog logo with the futuristic looking Googles on or whatever those are, the iPhone VR headset, which we'll get to in just a second here. But I've seen a lot of news lately about virtual reality when it comes to training. And it really caught my attention because I remember when the oil and gas industry specifically ushered in the simulators, especially when it came to fires and emergency management, because this allowed employees to experience kind of a real life situation without putting themselves in real danger. So it allowed some actual fight or flight type of response, etc. So I see where Toyota of North America is now bringing in virtual reality training for machine risk assessment, which I found very interesting. And so we wanted to bring in Clint Kling to talk about virtual reality training. He's done a number of different programs as well as worked with the state of South Dakota through the university system and others. So how are you doing today?
Good, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about what's going about. Boy, there's my northern roots. Let's talk about how Toyota specifically is bringing in kind of a virtual reality training culture now. It looked like down in the factory floor, huh?
Yeah, it appears that they have some sort of virtual reality risk assessment for a machine of theirs. Robotic type factory, I guess, on the factory floor, which is pretty ideal, I guess, for the VR simulations or VR training.
Well, to me, what it reminded me of when I was looking at some of the different stills and some of the different screenshots and the description, it did remind me of the simulators that kind of ushered in in the oil and gas industry through some of the emergency training about spills and blasts and et cetera. What would be the difference between like a simulator and like a virtual reality training experience? Are they the same or is there some differences?
Well, definitely some differences, but there's some similarities to them where they're, you know, trying to project, you know, different scenarios on a, you know, a 2D screen, which would be mostly like your simulators, and the 3D environment, which is a virtual reality experience. Definitely come with their different experiences for the user, which one of the benefits, I guess, with the VR is having kind of that more in-depth like experience, engaging, you know, the surroundings where you actually feel like you're in that environment, where 2D sometimes on a flat screen, you can still get a lot of good training off of that, but at the same time, you're not really immersed in it, per se.
That's what this reminded me of, the next level of that simulator type of a thing, because now it's more of a simulation role play almost, where you're adding that different element. And I understand the simulators had that to a certain degree, but this is, it's the next level. It's you're seeing it now in corporations like Toyota. They're bringing it to the factory floor. I saw where there's several police departments from different parts of the country, they're bringing in virtual reality training too. And that one really caught my eye, because when you have corporate America and the government starting to bring in some of this virtual reality training, it's not long before it's just going to take off. What's going on here? Why are so many of these organizations looking to this virtual reality training? Is it that effective?
Well, it's definitely got its benefits as far as being a effective training. We'll get to that in a minute. I mean, a lot of my university research was based on, you know, assessing effectiveness in training, just because, you know, everybody said VR was better and nobody really had any hard data, you know. And I spent, you know, a year and a half or so setting up experiments and running them and basically showcasing, you know, what is effective training, and as far as VR goes, what's effective training as far as our traditional methods go.
To check out the full-length interview in its entirety, go to thecrudelife.com or check us out on Substack, www.thecrudelife.substack.com. More to come right here on The Crude Life Week in Review. My name is Jason Spies, and this is The Crude Life Week in Review. I ever had. If Willie does it, it can't be bad. Well, I woke up on the wrong side of the bed.
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
Down, I'm Steve Bach, along with Jason Spies from The Crude Life. You can catch Crude Life Sunday mornings, 10 a.m. right here on Super Talk 1270. And Jason, welcome back to the program, my friend.
Well, thank you very much for having me on this Wattage Wednesday here as we try to get a cup of coffee ready for this morning discussion on all good things.
See, now I don't drink coffee usually, but I've discovered sweet cream because I'm trying to drink less pop because I drink too much Diet Coke and too much Diet Mountain Dew. And so I've been trying to drink more coffee, and I love the smell of coffee. I don't necessarily like the taste of coffee, so it's not really coffee by the time I get done putting all the other stuff in it, which is probably less healthy than just drinking the pop. But I've discovered Italian sweet cream. Coffee's tolerable. Like I don't have to add a lot of stuff, just add a little of that and I'm okay. So I've actually been drinking a little bit more coffee these days.
That was my gateway when I got into coffee.
It's your gateway drug.
Well, I mean, let's be honest here. Coffee. I've gone a year without coffee. And that first cup of coffee again, it was like I had a superpower. It is definitely a drug. It is a stimulant. It is a superpower. And, you know, you become so adapt to it because a lot of people drink it throughout the day. But
coffee mug that's in the back seat of your truck that you grab every morning. Yeah, no.
Hey, say, I mentioned newspaper earlier, not to get off the coffee talk, but I did want to bring up something that I got to be honest. I'm very disappointed in the media coverage of anything related to oil and gas over the past month specifically. And we can get into Jack Dura, Associated Press writer, who I've never met, but his recent story, I got to call red flags on. But when I take a look at whether it's K-Fire TV, Bismarck Tribune, Dickinson Press, Fargo Fulham, I'm sorry, Fargo Forum here, I thought it was at a local diner.
You're right,
in Fargo.
Okay.
Well, that's what the old folks start to call, you know, the Fargo Forum is the Fargo Fulham, you know, that kind of thing. But my point is that the headline, and folks, you can Google this and see for yourself, the headline this last week from Lynn Helms' recent propaganda is that the cold weather has something to do with the dip in production within the state of North Dakota and the Bakken deal. When you go take a look at the historical, Steve, I mean, there's cold. I mean, this is like a record winter for warmth.
Yeah.
And so the story is that if you're dropping production during record warmth, well, now you can't go. I mean, how lazy in the media not to challenge it. How lazy on Lynn Helms to use that excuse.
I have talked to so many people in the oil patch that, you know, and there's a hardy breed that works out in the oil patch that, you know, makes sure production's rolling when it's 30 below and the wind's blowing and they work.
Yeah.
They work their butt off and
sacrifice.
And I have talked to so many people out in the oil patch this year that, God, they're loving it. I mean, I go back to, was it the winter of 2011, 2012, I think was the last time we had a nice winter. I mean, it was colder in April and May than it was in January, February, March. And we've had a couple little cold snaps. We've had a couple little storm systems. It's a week here, a week and a half there where it got a little cold. But record temperatures for the most part and lack of heavy snowfall. And they're loving it. They're like, we are, you know, gangbusters. We're working our butts off. It's so that tells me production should be going up, not down. Because if you go back and look at typical January, February numbers, when you get the snowstorms, you get the record cold, and North Dakota winter, December, January, February, North Dakota winter. And we haven't had that this year. So traditionally, those numbers should be stable or rising compared to previous winters. I don't get the numbers. And you're right, the production shouldn't be dropping because of the weather. No, production numbers are down, sure, but you can't blame the weather for that.
To check out the full-length interview in its entirety, go to thecrudelife.com or check us out on Substack, www.thecrudelife.substack.com. More to come right here on The Crude Life Week in Review. My name is Jason Spies, and this is The Crude Life Week in Review.
Kind of like you have plans to save the world. Just remember your task will only last if you don't take off your mask. When
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy. The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
Down in the Delta, where there is shelter, no helter-skelter, no blues around. I'm on my way now, most any day now, I'm Delta bound.
So I think I dug my heels into the Crude Life just about a year ago, like when the market started going absolutely haywire in 2020, I started just looking for commentary that was interesting and grounded, and especially commentary that was based in the Bakken. And there is no one better than the Crude Life. You have the monopoly on that, as far as I'm concerned.
What kinds of other certain topics that interest you maybe more than others when you're listening to oil and gas?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know what's interesting is when you first enter this industry, and I came in as a complete newbie. I was telling you guys before we started recording, I'm a music major. Like, what? How did you end up in oil and gas as a music major?
I'm really upset you're not going to beatbox for me, but maybe some
today,
other time.
Not today. Well, the 11 Lounge, May 14th, 7:30 p.m. I'll be playing. But when you come into the industry, you think everybody knows everything. It's kind of like when you're a little kid and you assume the adults in the room.
It's very intimidating.
It's absolutely intimidating. And so you're afraid to ask questions. You think, oh, like, you know, if I don't know what this term means, I'm a complete idiot and this person isn't going to want to talk to me. But yeah, so you come to realize very quickly, though, that everybody has their own silo. And the more complete picture you have, especially if you're working in the compliance industry as I am, the better equipped you are to speak different languages and translate across those quote-unquote cultures within the industry. So while I'm interested in topics like ESG, which, you know, is compliance adjacent, there's a big kerfuffle. I know you guys have done a series on ESG recently. I really am interested in everything. I was just talking to a frack engineer over there, Monty Bessler, whom you just interviewed. He's one of my favorite people in the Bakken. So literally anything a person will tell me about oil and gas, I will absorb it. I'm like a sponge.
Yeah, I love that. I love your passion for the industry. And how long have you been in the industry?
I've been in the industry 5-6 years. I lose track, actually.
What got you started into the oil and gas industry?
It's such a weird story, and I don't know how long of a version I should tell you. But the short version is that my brother studied abroad in Thailand in undergrad.
And what was her name?
The name of this person?
No, the broad.
The broad?
I'm just kidding.
Oh. Studied abroad.
I forgot Jason's crude, no pun intended, sense of humor. So he was studying abroad in Thailand with this gentleman who was from Williston, started a company in the Bakken. And I didn't have any concern about this at the time, but this person became a family friend and was really near and dear to our hearts. Like I said, I'm a music major. What does a music major need to do when they graduate college? They're touring. They're producing music. You know, I'm investing in my own career, doing what I need to do to make it, quote unquote, as a singer. And it really, really helps if you have a remote job to subsidize that.
To make a little money to pay the rent.
Yeah, to make a little bit of money to pay the rent and pay for the records that you're producing. Mm-hmm. Pay for all of the social media, the press, like everything that you need to pay for in order to have a sustainable career. I was actually working a different remote job fresh out of college. Lost it because I was a little bit too sassy.
I can't tell.
And I call up my friend, this family friend, frantically, and I'm like, oh my god, do you have anything that could help hold me over at this period of time where I don't have a job? I'm imagining my world crashing, having to be a barista, having to work at a department store, which, you know, disables, essentially puts on hold my entire music career. Lo and behold, somebody had left that very week in a compliance position at his company. So I don't have a clue about this industry. I had done a little bit of editing work, you know, on SOPs, or like he'd given me a bit of reading material and editing work prior to that. But other than that, I didn't know what I was doing. But within 3 months, I took a department that was in the red and made it not only in the green, but one of the most profitable departments in the company, not to toot my own horn.
No, but I fit. Sometimes a fresh perspective. Absolutely.
Yes, and I just fell in love with it. And I started to see, compliance is not just a bunch of boxes that you're checking. It's a story. It's a relationship between the supplier, on the one hand, these small companies that make the Williston Basin tick, and the large producers that are funding all of that and making life as we know it possible. So I fell in love with that story and started to see, oh my God, there's so many things that people aren't seeing about this storyline. And by stepping back as a complete newcomer, a freaking music major, I would like to think that I brought something really new to the compliance industry. So I ended up starting my own company later down the line, but I could not be more grateful that I was given that random, accidental intro to the industry years ago.
I got a question for you. We got to rewind a little bit. Be kind, rewind. You mentioned silos. Mm. That was a trigger word for me. In like, oh, somebody's speaking my language. But then I realized, I don't know if we're speaking the same language. So what's a silo to you in that context?
What's a silo to me?
In that context, yeah.
Well,
you talked about how industry had silos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So if somebody is working upstream, they might know nothing about midstream, and they might know nothing about downstream.
I love this.
No, this is very important conversation.
I'd love to hear somebody else talk about this.
And not only that, you can zoom in
a little
bit closer.
Oh, just wait. It's going to get better.
So even if you're in the upstream side, you could be a welder, or you could be providing insulation, or you could be roustabout, or you could be hotshot, and you might know nothing about what those other guys are doing, even though you're all technically upstream. You know, so that super hyper zoomed in perspective, I find, can be really, really crippling for service providers, especially when they're trying to communicate to producers their value, because they don't know the context of their own value. And that's one thing that I really try to bring to the table for the small contractors that I serve.
Yeah, or the arm of the energy chain that they support.
Yes.
And yeah. But they could be supporting it on a wider scale.
Yeah.
But like you said, exactly. They put themselves in a corner, mm-hmm. and they only cater to a certain part of that
yep.
stream.
And it's,
right?
If we want to make an analogy to music here, it's like, oh yeah, I know how to drum super, super well. Look at me. I'm a fantastic drummer, blah, blah, blah. But if I don't know how to play, you know, in time with the bass, and I don't know what that drumming is supposed to sound like in context with the singer, and I'm drumming too loud, I mean, I'm not doing my job. So service providers are doing themselves a great disservice by not taking the time to step back, learn more about where they're fitting into the supply chain, and really help the producers solve their problems better.
And that's going to do it this week for the Crude Life Week in Review. My name is Jason Spies, and we'll be back next week at this time on this radio station with the Crude Life Week in Review. From the staff here at the Crude Life Week in Review, my name is Jason Spies, asking each and every one of you to remember, all energy has a purpose, and we are all energy. Make it a fantastic week.
They keep telling me it's only a phase, and that soon enough I'll see that I'm crazy for loving you the way that I do, because you could love somebody like you. They say you're too damn small, and I won't pretend it don't matter at all. But no matter what the trouble ahead, I still won't regret this time that I spent. Sad to behold, nothing you could do would make me go. We'll let the world judge what they don't know. Giving me a heartbeat.
The Crude Life, the most trusted voice in energy.
In a world of ever-changing energy, staying ahead is crucial. We are introducing Oil Man Magazine, your trusted source for leaders in American energy. At Oil Man Magazine, they deliver more than just everyday industry news. They provide a comprehensive overview of the oil and gas market, revealing the trends, technologies, and software applications shaping the future. The Oil Man Magazine honors the proud history of the oil and gas industry by reporting on the cutting-edge developments that drive progress. Dive into fascinating articles about the future of the oil business, pipeline safety, going green, and security concerns. Discover what's happening with oil in America and around the world. The Oil Man Magazine's website is your gateway to the latest news, insights, and breakthroughs in the industry. Everything you need to know about the oil industry is right here in one convenient place. The Oil Man's user-friendly website is packed with helpful information and great features, ensuring you're always up to date. But time is of the essence. The severity of the oil and gas industry demands immediate attention. Now is the time to act. Visit oilmanmagazine.com and empower yourself with the knowledge that drives change. Together, let's shape the future of the oil and gas industry. Oil Man Magazine and their companion magazines, Oil Woman Magazine and Energies Magazine, leading the way for the leaders in American energy. Oil Man Magazine, your compass in a rapidly evolving world.